And so, in a world where we need some good news, let me deliver. The globally influential Time Out magazine has just published its top 10 cool places on Earth. Coming in at number 8, the only UK entry is the Glasgow East End community of Denison. It's a great part of the world. It's also the birthplace of Lulu. Makes me want to shout. Calling time on COVID, Nicola Sturgeon brings in new restrictions. The FM says she's nothing to hide in the Alex Salmond inquiry. National fives are called off to protect sitting hires next May. And the Tories are isolated as Holyrood rejects the internal market bill. From Caledonia Media, I'm Charles Fletcher with Scotland's favourite political show, The Week in Holyrood.
Sticking to all of this isn't easy, and after 7 long months, it is harder than it has ever been. But it is essential. It is the best way to look out for each other. And now more than ever, we all need that spirit of love and solidarity that has served us so well. And hard though it is to believe it right now, all the hard sacrifices we are making will hasten the brighter days that do lie ahead. The pandemic will pass, so let's do all we can to help each other through it. Let's stick with it, and above all, let's stick together.
Matin Bha. 20 years ago this week, Scotland lost our first minister. Donald Dewar, the architect of devolution, served as first minister from the opening of the parliament in May 1999 until his death in October 2000. The current Labour leader, Richard Leonard, says it's time this parliament reasserts the values of Donald Dewar.
It's time for the parliament to reflect on those values that Donald Dewar set out as the First Minister back in 1999, and I think we need to return to those founding principles and reassert them.
I'll be joined by Richard Leonard in conversation later in the programme. But first, the COVID cases continue to rise and the First Minister has crafted new restrictions on all of our lives. If you live in the Central Belt, you'll perhaps feel it more acutely. All licensed pubs and restaurants are to close there from Friday evening. Takeaways will be permitted. Daytime alcohol sales indoors is banned across Scotland until the 24th of October. But you can buy a pint outside until 10 o'clock at night, out with the Central Belt. We're not allowed to go into each other's homes except in special circumstances, like delivering care and support. And if you don't like the sound of this, it's being done because the pandemic is still live, and Nicola Sturgeon says this action will hopefully prevent even tougher measures down the line. In short, she's trying to buy us time.
Let me emphasise some of the more positive elements of our current position, because it is important, I think, for the morale of all of us, that we don't forget that progress has been made. It might not feel this way, but the situation now is better than it was in March. We are benefiting from the sacrifices made over the summer by driving the virus to very low levels. Then we have helped to ensure that even after several weeks of increases, the estimated total number of cases is currently just 13% of the peak level back in March. Cases are rising, but not as quickly as they were then. In addition, and most importantly of all, we now have Test and Protect teams across the country who are doing exceptional work. Test and Protect is now bearing a lot of the strain of controlling the virus. And of course, we understand more now about how to reduce the risk of transmission by meeting outdoors rather than indoors if possible, wearing face coverings, cleaning our hands thoroughly, and keeping our distance from people in other households. So while there are significant restrictions still in place, and they are hard and painful, we are living much more freely now than in the spring and early summer. And we are determined, if at all possible, that this will continue. So I want to be clear, we are not going back into lockdown today. We are not closing schools, colleges or universities. We are not halting the remobilisation of the NHS for non-COVID care. And we are not asking people to stay at home. So while the measures I announced today will feel like a backward step, and in many respects I know they are in the interest of protecting our progress overall. It is by taking tough but necessary action now that we hope to avoid even tougher action in future. It's worth remembering that when I updated Parliament just over 2 weeks ago, the average number of new cases being reported each day was 285. That was up from 102 3 weeks previously. Now we are reporting an average of 788 new cases each day. In addition, I can report that in the 7 days up to Monday, the number of people in hospital with COVID increased by almost 80%. And the number of people who died with COVID last week was the highest for 14 weeks. In fact, there was the same number of deaths in the last week alone as in the whole of the previous month. The increase in the numbers of people in hospital with and sadly dying from COVID reflect the rise we are now seeing in new cases amongst older age groups. In the second half of September, cases were rising most rapidly in the younger age groups. But in the past week, cases in people over 80 years old increased by 60%, and cases in the 60 to 79-year-old age group more than doubled. And we're seeing geographic as well as demographic spread. Without a doubt, and by some distance, the highest levels of infection are across the Central Belt. We are particularly concerned about Greater Glasgow and Clyde, Lanarkshire, Ayrshire and Arran, Lothian and Forth Valley, and that will be reflected in what I say later.
So, to more on the detail. Hospitality and tourism are going to take the biggest hit over the coming 3 weekends and 2 weeks. The Scottish Government has put a package of £40 million on the table for the coming fortnight and is seeking the help of those on the front line to guide them on how best to use it.
We need to do more and we need to do it now. And to those who will wonder and ask, understandably, if the measures I set out today go too far, let me be very clear about this. If this was a purely one-dimensional decision, if the immediate harm from COVID was all we had to consider, it is very likely that we would go further. But 7 months into this pandemic, I am acutely aware that this is not and cannot be a one-dimensional decision. We have a duty to balance all of the different harms caused by the pandemic. We must consider the direct harm to health from the virus, which must be reduced, but do that alongside the harm being done to jobs and the economy, which in turn, of course, has an impact on people's health and well-being. And we have to consider the wider harms to health and well-being that the virus and the restrictions deployed to control it are having on all of us. For all of these reasons, we are applying a far more targeted approach than we did in March, one which reduces opportunities for the virus to spread while keeping businesses and other activities as open as possible. And we are not recommending that people who shielded over the summer should return to staying completely indoors. We know how damaging that is to your well-being, but we do recommend that you take extra care, especially if you live in the Central Belt.
The measures the First Minister is bringing in stop at the border, but I expect England will begin to follow her lead from Monday. Reality check, the pandemic will not conveniently follow the furlough plan of the Chancellor. It will not necessarily step back for Christmas. Nicola Sturgeon is at times overwhelmed by the compliance and the support for the restrictive measures we've had to deal with so far.
And continue to take the other basic steps, difficult but basic steps, that we know will protect you and each other. Please do not visit each other's homes for now. Work from home if you can. Download the Protect Scotland app if you can and haven't already done so. And of course, remember facts. Face coverings, avoid crowded places, clean hands and hard surfaces, 2 metre distancing and self-isolate and get tested if you have symptoms. Sticking to all of this isn't easy, and after 7 long months it is harder than it has ever been. But it is essential. It is the best way to look out for each other, and now more than ever we all need that spirit of love and solidarity that has served us so well. And hard though it is to believe it right now, all the hard sacrifices we are making will hasten the brighter days that do lie ahead. The pandemic will pass, so let's do all we can to help each other through it. Let's stick with it, and above all, let's stick together. And my thanks again to everybody across the country for everything you are doing.
Also in this new package of measures, supermarkets are to bring back the one-way system. We're told to expect a return to queuing. And all shops are being asked to reintroduce the 2 metre distancing. Wearing masks or face coverings indoors will be mandatory unless you're exempt for health reasons. And we're also encouraged to wear them outdoors if it's busy. A reminder then, we can meet in socially distanced groups of no more than 6 people from no more than 2 households. The First Minister stresses this is not a return of the lockdown. Former Labour leader Joanne Lamont is unhappy at the way the potential new measures had been trailed.
I don't know who was responsible for the kite flying and briefing over the last few weeks, but they should be ashamed of themselves, whoever they are, given the impact on those who are already fearful for their futures, and I trust the First Minister will sort these people out. Many people will immediately be without work, and because of the nature of their contracts, will be left with little or no income right now. What Scottish Government support is in place directly to help those workers now, many of whom, on the minimum wage and with little or no job security, have been seeking to implement ever-changing rules, and their ward has been a blanket ban? And can I ask, what will success look like, given that in Glasgow, for example, this close-down coincides with schools being on holiday, and surely it will therefore be difficult to see accurately what has caused change, if there is any?
First Minister.
Can I say, first of all, to Joanne Lamont, that the people she is inviting me to sort out, I guess, from the people she's referring to, are advisers to me and the government that right now are working round the clock to try to help this country through a pandemic. I will certainly not sort them out. I will continue to be deeply grateful for every single thing they are doing right now. That's a disgraceful thing, frankly, to ask of me.
You're listening to The Week in Holyrood. I'm Charles Fletcher. Thanks for your company. The UK government says it'll walk away from Brexit talks with the European Union next week unless there's an agreement on our future trade relationship. The EU says it will not accept a walk away and is instead offering to extend the period for talks because we're not yet at an agreement. The EU team says it's very clear Britain voted to leave the Union and is keen to ensure we go on the best possible terms for all. But terms there should be. Chief negotiator for the EU, Michel Barnier, says the door remains open. He's encouraging conversation. It's perhaps worth remembering Scotland voted to remain within the European Union. It's been one of the busiest news weeks at Holyrood forever. My colleagues and I in the media tower can scarce draw a breath as we try to bring you unrivalled coverage of the stories dropping all around us. Why, this week we've had new COVID restrictions, National Fives dumped, Parliament rejecting the Westminster Internal Market Bill, and a little local difficulty for the First Minister and her husband. I'm sure there's something I've missed. Yes, I bumped into Rachel Watson from the Daily Mail and Colin Mackay from STV in the garden lobby. They say hello and hope you're well. You're listening to The Week in Holyrood. Time for questions to the First Minister, and they come following the FM's statement on new restrictions. We begin in the Chamber with Labour leader Richard Leonard.
Liz Cameron, the Chief Executive of the Scottish Chambers of Commerce, said, and I quote her, "There was a complete and utter lack of consultation with business on yesterday's new restrictions. This," she said, "only serves to compound the blows of these restrictions." The STUC has confirmed that there was absolutely no consultation with them, even though they say the Scottish Government's approach has changed. First Minister, it is clear that this is not just about the decision you've taken, it's about the way that you have taken it. All week there were hints that tighter restrictions were coming, and all the while those set to be most affected by the restrictions were kept in the dark. Businesses have adapted to new rules. Businesses who were stocking their fridges, paying for supplies for 2 weeks off staycation, workers who have followed the guidance to the letter to keep their customers safe and to keep their jobs safe, but now see their jobs on the line. So, First Minister, why did you take this decision without consulting with, sharing the evidence with, and preparing adequate support for those most affected?
First Minister.
The decisions have to be taken by me and the government. We consult and talk to stakeholders, business, trade unions, other organisations on an ongoing basis. What we also have to do is assess the evidence on a daily basis and take account of the latest evidence before we come to decisions. I do stand every day and update people on the state of our thinking, on the factors we're taking into account and the decision-making process we go through. These are not normal times and these are not normal decision-making processes. And I know how difficult the consequences of these decisions are for businesses and for individuals. I don't expect these decisions to be welcome or popular. They're tough decisions, but they ultimately have to be made by government. And every day right now, and this is my job, I'm not in any way complaining about that. But every day right now, we are facing decisions where we literally have lives in one hand and jobs in the other. It's an impossible, almost, balance to strike. We are doing that to the best of our ability. In terms of the financial support for businesses affected by yesterday's announcement, Fergus Ewing has been speaking to stakeholders in the hospitality sector and tourism sector in particular, and we will make announcements, I hope, tomorrow on exactly how the £40 million of support that I announced yesterday will be allocated to businesses. I don't expect anybody out there to be happy with what we are having to do right now, but I do expect decision makers in this Parliament to have an understanding of the context in which we are operating. And these are not normal times. I do not get up in the morning and decide to close pubs for a sort of policy reason. We are in a global pandemic where we are trying to save lives and balance that with the interests of the economy as best we possibly can. And that's the difficult balance we will continue to strike, talking to and consulting as far as possible with different organisations and stakeholders along the way.
Richard Leonard.
Thank you. And look, I get the First Minister did not get up yesterday morning and decide to impose restrictions on pubs, restaurants and other hospitality establishments. It must have taken several days to come to that conclusion, which is why there should have been consultation with the industry and with the trade unions who represent the workforce in that industry. Since the start of this pandemic, we've called on the government to build up testing infrastructure and tracing capacity. And we have done it not to oppose the government, but precisely because we want the government to succeed, because we want new outbreaks to be contained. But every time we raise this, the First Minister has told us that Test and Protect is working well. Until yesterday, when there was finally an admission that the time bought by closing hospitality would allow for another review of the testing strategy. Yesterday, the First Minister finally spoke of, and I quote her, extending testing to more individuals and groups in society who do not have symptoms. We have asked repeatedly for more testing of asymptomatic people. We've asked for testing of incoming travellers. And we have asked for routine testing to be expanded to home care services. So can the First Minister tell us when this will finally be delivered?
Well, before I leave Richard Leonard's first point on consultation, what I said was I don't go up in the morning and deliberately try to do damage to any sector of the economy. But as it happens, the Cabinet met at 8:30 yesterday morning to take the final decisions on what I announced in Parliament this afternoon. We have sought to share our thinking as we've gone, recognising the difficult and abnormal situation we're all in right now. I spoke to Richard Leonard on Monday night with other party leaders to share the state of our thinking at that point, making very clear we hadn't taken final decisions because we were assessing the clinical evidence and taking the advice from our advisers. So these are difficult things, and I don't expect anybody to then just ignore the impact of these decisions. I am acutely aware, literally every waking moment right now, of the impact of decisions I take and the potential impact of decisions that I don't take. It is literally a life and jobs balance all of the time. And I wouldn't wish these decisions on anyone. I accept it's my responsibility. Nobody makes any of us do these jobs, but I literally wouldn't wish these decisions on anyone right now. And I'm trying my best to do them and reach them in the best possible way. I've never claimed to be infallible. I've never claimed that I will not get things wrong substantively or in process. And we try all along to get them better and to do better as we go. And I think that's what people would expect of government at times like this. And on testing, we don't have a functioning test and protect system. We have an extremely well-functioning test and protect system. One of the reasons why we have a situation right now, as I reported yesterday, where our estimated prevalence of this virus right now is about 13% of what the peak level was in March. Now, we think it's rising at a rate where it could catch up with that by the end of this month. But that 13% is what we aim now. But I've just given a figure for the tested positive cases, which is over 1,000. Back in March, I think the peak number of test positive cases we ever reported was around 500. The fact that we are reporting so many more cases now is because we are testing so many more people, because we have a well-functioning system. The results that are published weekly of Test and Protect in terms of contact tracing index cases, tracing contacts, they are doing exceptional work, but all of us have to play our part in combating this virus. The kind of restrictions I announced yesterday, which I hate having to announce. You look across the world right now, you look at Ireland, countries like Belgium, France, Germany even, all countries are grappling with these things, and we're doing it to the best of our ability, and I will continue to do that. I do think we want, as we go into this next phase, to have more parliamentary scrutiny and challenge on that. I think that's in the interests of all of us. But nobody should be under any illusions that these are easy decisions, or that there is ever an absolutely right or wrong thing to do.
Richard Leonard.
Thank you. I mean, I have to say, if Test and Protect is working so well, why are a third of people not being contact traced in 48 hours, with many waiting even longer? But let me turn to something else which has happened this week, which I think is important for Parliament to consider. Because whilst we are rightly concerned about further temporary restrictions on all of us, I want to turn to a group of people for whom life has been restricted for months, who live in fear that temporary limitations become permanent limitations. We must not forget these vulnerable people. Theirs has been an untold story of this pandemic until 2 days ago, when the Scottish Human Rights Commission published its impact monitoring report on COVID-19 social care and human rights. It makes for deeply concerning and at times harrowing reading. It tells of services cut or removed with little or no assessment and little or no communication. The Commission received reports of, and I quote, people left in dire situations, being forced to sleep in wheelchairs, unable to get out of bed, unable to wash and dress themselves. The conclusion of the report is that there has been, and I quote, a direct and detrimental effect on people's rights. The report makes 24 recommendations, amongst which is that care and support services must be restored to pre-pandemic levels. First Minister, it is the responsibility of government to ensure that people's rights, including their human rights, are upheld. So what guarantee can you give that social care services will be restored to at least pre-pandemic levels? When will people see their support packages returned in full? And when will you uphold the human rights and the dignity of those most vulnerable members of our society?
First Minister.
In everything we do, we seek to not just respect but uphold the human rights of people across the country, and we will always take extremely seriously anything that the Scottish Human Rights Commission says, and we will pay very careful and close attention to the report that Richard Leonard has referred to. It is critical that people's social care support is maintained. We are already working with local authorities, with health and social care partnerships, to assure people that any temporary changes that were essential and inevitable as a result of COVID should not become long-term. But it is important to stress that for wider safety reasons, some of those changes in the short term were unavoidable. But it's critical that changes to support arrangements are discussed with the person affected, with unpaid carers, and the impact and duration considered very carefully. And we continue to work not just with local authorities but with Scottish Care and others to address those concerns. So all of these matters, the Health Secretary attends to these matters on a literally daily basis. And as we continue to go through what continues to be a very challenging and difficult situation, we will strive to ensure that the rights and the circumstances of the most vulnerable in our society are absolutely at the centre of all of our decision making.
Lib Dem leader Willie Rennie is clear he wants asymptomatic testing.
The aim of Test and Protect is to protect the country from a second peak. The words of the First Minister in May when she launched the programme. Back then, 77 people tested positive. It's now, as of today, 1,027, when we were supposed to be heading towards elimination. In June, She said the purpose of the elimination strategy was to get more normality back and deal with any flare-ups or clusters or outbreaks in a much more targeted way. But now, as of yesterday, we have limits on travel, pubs and restaurants forced to close, the rule of six, no indoor visiting, no bingo, no bowling. That doesn't seem like a targeted approach. I think it's clear now that the government got carried away with its language over the summer. The First Minister did not use that time well to prepare adequately. So what would she have done differently to get on top of the virus over the summer?
First Minister.
No doubt when I look back on this episode, and we do it regularly, there's all sorts of things that we would do differently if we had our time again. That's probably in the nature of dealing with an unprecedented challenge. But I just fundamentally disagree with Willie Rennie's characterisation. It was absolutely right. It was not about getting carried away. It was essential over the summer that we used that time to drive the virus as low as possible. Because if we hadn't done that, then we would see levels of infection right now. And, you know, it's always difficult to be trying to prove a negative. We would be seeing levels of infection right now that were way out, way above what we are seeing already. If you look at the figures across the UK right now, we have an R number that appears, and R numbers are not perfect ways of describing what's happening with the virus, but we've got an R number that is marginally above other parts of the UK, and we have a growth rate that is marginally above other parts of the UK. But our case numbers per 100,000 on both a 7-day and 14-day rolling average are the lowest in the UK, and that is actually the benefit of having driven the virus low. So even although the virus is spreading again, it is doing it from a much lower base. And again, test and protect. Will never, and Willie Rennie, I'm sure if he goes back and mines my quotes, as he's obviously been done, he will find many times where I've said this, test and protect cannot suppress the virus on its own. Right now, it will be bearing. And again, we don't see this because it's preventing lots of cases that are not there right now because of the work it's doing. It's bearing a lot of the strain of this. But unfortunately, with an infectious virus, we all have to play our part. And that's what we are all being asked to do. And it is really difficult for everybody. I absolutely recognise. But that is in the nature of what we're dealing with right now. And it's what every country in the world virtually is having to do. And while, as I said yesterday, this is really difficult, I think, for all of us to really think about right now, because life still feels so abnormal. But we are living with much more normality now than we were in April, May, June, even into July. In many ways, aspects of our life has returned, but there are still restrictions on our life because of the pandemic that we are dealing with. So I absolutely understand people's frustrations. I share those frustrations. But we are in this situation in common with everybody across the world, and we have to keep doing the right things to get ourselves through. And that's what the government has to continue to lead.
Willie Rennie.
If the government is to get on top of this virus, we need to be frank about what has happened. Test and protect has not protected us from a second peak, and it has not, and the elimination strategy has not succeeded. But let me turn to something that could help. At Northumbria University in England, they carried out mass testing of students. Last week, they found 90% of those who tested positive showed no symptoms. That's 9 out of 10 did not know that they had the disease. They and their contracts are now self-isolating to stop the spread and get the virus under control. So far, the Scottish Government has refused to embrace this approach. But with this evidence from Northumbria, I want to try again. Will the First Minister agree to mass routine testing for students so we can stop further outbreaks in our universities?
First Minister.
Can I firstly just come back to test and protect? Because I'm conscious right now there are lots and lots of people across this country working in test and protect, doing exceptional work. And I don't want to have a statement left hanging that says test and protect is not protecting the country. Test and protect cannot suppress this virus on its own, but the work of test and protect right now is preventing countless infections. That will be saving countless numbers of people from becoming ill and potentially countless numbers of people from dying. Those working in Test and Protect are doing an excellent job, and I think we should all be deeply grateful to them for that. It's also, Willie Rennie and I will no doubt continue. I think Willie Rennie, who's a really smart, intelligent guy, don't quote me on that in your next election leaflet, I'll deny it to the end of days, I think in some respects is choosing not to understand the elimination strategy point, but we'll no doubt continue to debate these things and both of us enjoy it. I'm not sure it helps anybody watching out there. But on the point about testing, we do more asymptomatic testing. Our testing, and again, I mean this with the greatest of respect, the testing strategy will develop in line with the proper consideration and clinical advice that we have. The latest review, as I said yesterday, will be carried out over the next couple of weeks. And we will look at where it is sensible to take asymptomatic testing next. We've already extended that to care homes, to NHS staff, and that discussion will continue. But what I would say is the university outbreaks we have had, and I'm not complacent about this, our data right now shows that the impact of those is beginning to abate. So the work that Test and Protect has been doing through university outbreaks, again, has been helping to contain those outbreaks from getting greater. So I'll take Willie Rennie's points about testing, and I can assure him that we will continue to consider his points as we will consider those that others make to us.
You're listening to The Week in Holyrood, and coming up in the next half hour, Education Secretary John Swinney on dropping the National Fives, and a fireside chat with Labour leader Richard Leonard. Now to a topic that's casting a cloud over the Scottish Parliament. There's a committee investigating harassment complaints at Holyrood. As I mentioned before, the shorthand for this is the Alex Salmond Inquiry. This week, details of the First Minister's evidence to the committee has been revealed. It emerges Nicola Sturgeon has forgotten about a meeting where she was told about allegations of a sexual nature against Mr Salmond. In a series of WhatsApp messages between Nicola Sturgeon and Alex Salmond, she says it would be wrong for her to intervene. Added to the mix, there are also WhatsApp messages from the SNP's chief executive, Peter Murrow, about Alex Salmond. Mr Murrow is married to Nicola Sturgeon. The First Minister says she has nothing to hide and is happy to appear under oath before committee whenever they call her. Holyrood Conservative group leader Ruth Davidson focused on it in her questions to the First Minister.
Does it sound credible to forget a meeting at which you learn for the first time that there are allegations of sexual misconduct being levelled against your predecessor and mentor of two decades?
First Minister.
I get why people will look at that and raise an eyebrow, but perhaps if I can explain the circumstances, as I did in the evidence that I submitted to the committee 2 months ago, in which I'm very pleased to say was published yesterday. I read a comment, actually, by somebody yesterday, forgive me, I can't remember which MSP it was, saying surely something like that would be seared on your memory. There is something seared on my memory, and it is actually the meeting that took place some 3 days later, when Alex Salmond himself sat in my own home and gave me the details of the complaints that had been made against him, and also gave me his response to aspects of those complaints. That is what is seared in my memory, and I think most reasonable people would understand that. And, you know, forgive me, Presiding Officer, if that has somehow overwritten in my mind a much more fleeting, opportunistic meeting that took place a few days earlier, then that is just how it is. But any suggestion that it should just have somehow been covered up or not dealt with properly, I absolutely reject. So when the committee chooses to call me, I'll go into all of the detail. But in the meantime, I am going to get on with the job that I think most people out there want me to do, which is continue to take the tough decisions to get this country through a global pandemic. And finally, and I know Ruth Davidson doesn't like being reminded of this, but I am open to scrutiny, not just by this Parliament. I'm open to scrutiny by the Scottish people. And when I stand before them in an election next year, they can make their judgment on me and in my conduct. They won't get that opportunity with Ruth Davidson because she'll be away by then in the House of Lords.
Ruth Davidson.
So shall we?
Let's give them all the information before then, shall we? Because the SNP appears to be taking people for fools here. We have a chief executive of the SNP sending texts to colleagues calling for pressure to be put on the police and then saying he didn't mean it. We have the First Minister attending meetings about the Salmon case, then omitting them from her diary and claiming she'd forgotten all about it. And we have a Scottish Government willfully obstructing an inquiry by this Parliament and then attacking anyone who points it out. The First Minister's former Health Secretary, Alex Neil, now says that a full judicial inquiry needs to be held into this scandal. Given the secrecy, given the evasion and the unbelievable nonsense coming from the SNP on this matter, doesn't he have a point?
First Minister.
There is a parliamentary inquiry underway that I've given evidence to and that I will sit in front of and give evidence to orally. I will do it under oath. I've got nothing to hide in all of this. I've had 2 years or more of people making accusations about my conduct. It's not my conduct that sparked any of this. I've tried to act in the proper way. If I've made mistakes along the way, then I will say that and people can make their judgments. But I've tried to do the right thing and I will continue to try to do the right thing, because I actually believe that when serious complaints are made, that they are properly investigated. I also actually believe that when there are criminal complaints made, it is actually right to say that the police should properly investigate and that the police should answer any questions. That's, I think, what most people would think is right and proper. Proper investigation, proper due process. That is what should happen. I don't know what would have happened in the Conservatives. Maybe these things would just have been swept under the carpet because they weren't convenient politically. But I don't think that would have been the right thing to happen. So I'll answer any and all questions that anybody wants to ask of me on this. But as I say again, I think most people out there right now listening to this exchange, people living with the consequences of COVID, people who might have lost people to COVID, people who are worried about their jobs and their livelihoods, people who probably want to hear me stand and talk about the things we're doing to get this country through COVID, will be looking at Ruth Davidson right now and saying, what on earth is she thinking?
So to education, and John Swinney has cancelled the sitting of next year's National Fives. He says that's to help protect hires and advanced hires. They're delayed by 2 weeks and may yet be called off. John Swinney says he's acting to support teachers and his clear priority, students across Scotland.
In taking this decision on National Five exams, we also need to think about hires and advanced hires. In a standard exam year, the National Fives constitute more than half of all exams taken. From a public health point of view, not having these exams significantly reduces the risk of the exams as a whole. It means that we can build an exam diet for hires and advanced hires that is as safe as it possibly can be, using all the coronavirus mitigations we have sadly become so familiar with, including physical distancing and enhanced cleaning. That means that the exams determining the results that most pupils leave schools with, the exams that determine most people's future path into work, college or university, can go ahead as long as the public health guidance allows it. It also means that we can use the time in the school year freed up by cancelling the National Five exams to make up some of the time pupils have lost at the end of last year. As a result, I can confirm that the higher and advanced higher exams will begin on the 13th of May, later than normal, and giving pupils back approximately 2 weeks of the learning time that they lost this year. Certification day will remain as the 10th of August. This additional time, in conjunction with the course assessment modifications that the SQA have made following its consultation, give the greatest chances of these exams being implemented fairly. Presiding Officer, while I'm taking steps that make space for higher and advanced higher exams this next year, I'm acutely aware that there is no way of knowing what circumstances we will face at that point. To avoid decisions being made in extremis, as quite simply had to be the case this year, a clear contingency plan will continue to be developed for those exams. This will include key checkpoints up to the February break to assess public health advice and, in the light of that, of our plans. If necessary, we will award higher and advanced higher courses based on teacher professional judgment, supported by SQA quality assurance, taking account of classroom assessment evidence, including prelims, where appropriate. Presiding Officer, in deciding the way forward for this year's exams, there is a reality that we must face. Coronavirus has not gone away. If anything, it is making a comeback. Our task is to build a system of awards that can be delivered despite coronavirus. And I believe the plan that we have developed does that. It has evidence at its heart, it puts a robust system of quality assurance in place, and it works with teachers to award on the basis of their professional judgment. I believe it is fair, I believe it is rigorous, and of greatest importance, it gives us the opportunity to recognise the achievements of young people in Scotland in these challenging days.
Now it's 20 years since we lost Donald Dewar, our first First Minister. As Scottish Labour leader, he crafted and delivered devolution. His successor is Richard Leonard, who pays tribute to Donald Dewar by saying the Holyrood Parliament should reassert Donald's values for this place. But we begin our conversation on the topic that's dominated our lives for so much of this year, the pandemic. I asked Richard Leonard about the impact coronavirus has had on our care homes.
Our view has been that the tragic deaths in residential care homes was the scandal of the first wave of COVID-19, and we need to ensure it doesn't become the scandal of the second wave of COVID-19. So we want to see guaranteed supplies of personal protective equipment to people who work in care homes, those people going in and out of care homes. We want to see regular testing of the staff that work in care homes. We want to see, of course, all necessary measures taken, including no repeat of what happened previously, which we only discovered thanks to press freedom of information requests, that patients were discharged from hospital who had either not been tested at all for COVID-19 or, as it turns out, had been tested, had tested positive, and were still sent into residential care homes. And the point about residential care homes is these are the most vulnerable and susceptible members of our community and are at most risk. And they should not be exposed to the additional risk that they were placed under by the early discharge of people from hospital who had not been tested for COVID-19.
And having watched and listened to you in the chamber as you have been very straightforward with the First Minister, making demands, calling for an inquiry, do you believe the Scottish Government is now living up to the measure that you have asked them to take?
Well, we involved the Scottish Human Rights Commission because we felt that some of the guidance that the Scottish Government has issued breached the human rights of those elderly people in residential care, up to and including the right to life. But they were all, because they were denied access to treatment that everybody else in society would still get access to. They were sent to care homes in some cases without being told that's where they were being sent. Their families and next of kin didn't know that's where they were being sent. So there are some serious questions over what happened and whether their human rights were respected or not. And it's my firm belief that they weren't. So we've now got an agreement that any public inquiry that takes place will have a human rights dimension to it, especially when it looks into what happened in residential care. But we've also said that we need to rapidly learn the lessons of what happened in the spring and early summer to make sure that they are not repeated. And that should be done in full public view. So we've said that there ought to be an urgent and open inquiry, not a full-scale judge-led public inquiry, but nonetheless an open and expert-led inquiry, so that the lessons are learned and we look publicly at what those lessons are. I mean, you know, frankly, the government, within a day of announcing a U-turn on the SQA results fiasco, appointed an academic from Stirling University to head up an inquiry into what happened there. So if they can move rapidly when it comes to school results for young people, why can't it act rapidly and investigate and bring forward the lessons from what happened in residential care to our older citizens?
So the lesson on this, Scottish Government could do better?
100%. Absolutely. Personally, there are friends of mine, family members of mine who have lost their lives. There is a big toll that many people and many families are undergoing. But there is also the economic dimension to this, and we know that in a matter of a few weeks' time. People who have been supported through the UK government's job retention scheme, the furlough scheme, that's coming to an end. And so, you know, I'm speaking to lots of people and to lots of families who are having sleepless nights because they do not know whether come November, December, Christmas, whether they are going to be in work or not. So there are people who are staring into the prospect of unemployment, of their businesses being unable to continue or in some cases even to reopen. And there is, I think, a huge toll on people as a result of that, both physically but also mentally. And there are long-term mental health issues which I think we're going to have to deal with as a society, which arise from this period of time that we've been living through.
We don't know what the First Minister is going to announce in only a couple of hours from now, but what should she be announcing?
Well, whatever she announces, it needs to be demonstrably evidence-based. And one of our criticisms of decisions that have been taken is that there has been insufficient evidence to back up decisions. And so, you know, recently the decision to impose a 10 o'clock curfew on restaurants, bars, pubs and so on doesn't appear to have been substantiated by any firm evidence. And that's not to say it isn't the right thing to do, but all of this is predicated on public consent. And to maintain public consent, which I see is diminishing somewhat, to maintain public consent requires people being persuaded that it is the right thing to do. And I think in order to do that, there needs to be a clear show of evidence out in the public domain that these steps are entirely necessary. So we are told that the two principal sources of transmission of the virus are household-to-household contact and the hospitality industry. If that's the case, and I'm not disputing that it's the case, but people need to be shown clearly that there is firm evidence to back that up. So when I speak to a grandmother who's sitting in a cafe in Kirkcaldy last week, and she says to me, I'm waiting here to see my grandson and a daughter. She says, why do I have to come to a cafe to meet my grandson? Why can't my grandson just come to my house? And there are reasons for that about, you know, the passing of the virus through household-to-household contact. But is that true in all circumstances? Or does it happen if there are multiple gatherings of more than two households? So I think people need to have some confidence and trust in the system. And whatever is announced, whatever further restrictions come in, unless they are underpinned by evidence and a compelling, persuasive argument, it will become more and more difficult to persuade people to comply with them.
And we have been compliant in the main.
Hugely. Yeah, hugely.
You were asked last week about the disgraced SNP MP Margaret Ferrier and her decision to take public transport, fully knowing that she had tested positive for COVID. And when asked, the first thing you said was, I hope she recovers fully. You're also of the belief she should resign.
Yeah, because I think any Member of Parliament is elected to make laws. If you so flagrantly flout such a fundamental law that's affecting so many people and is requiring so many of the people you represent in Parliament to make such huge sacrifices, then you know, I think you need to look at yourself. And in the case of the actions taken by Margaret Ferrier, I think that they cross over a line beyond which, in my view, her position becomes completely untenable. And she represents an area which has got the fourth highest number of people on the furlough scheme. And so the fourth highest number of people in Scotland who are now contemplating whether or not they're going to have a job by Christmas or not. It's a constituency that contains residential care homes, which have seen a high incidence of deaths. It's a constituency where people have been up and against it. and jobs have been lost, lives have been lost. And so to, in such a cavalier way, disregard the most basic of rules which has governed all of us, you know, not just in the last few weeks, but from the very beginning of the pandemic and the restrictions that were introduced, I just think is unconscionable. And I think no wonder there have been cross-party calls for her to resign as a Member of Parliament.
And you've raised a petition calling for her resignation.
Yes, I have, because I think that it appears that there is a degree of intransigence on Margaret Ferrier's part. The leader of her party has called on her to resign, and that appears to have had no effect. So I think it's time now for public opinion in her constituency to be brought to bear, so that she is left in no uncertain terms that the people who elected her no longer have confidence in her and that she must step down.
Harold Wilson, in difficulty with backbenchers, once said, "I know what's going on. I'm going on. Where are you going, Richard?"
Well, I'm going on as well. I mean, there was some disquiet in the group in Holyrood, from a small number of people in the group in Holyrood who questioned whether or not I should lead the Scottish Labour Party into next year's elections. But before I was elected, we'd had 5 leaders in 6 years, and part of the mandate I got when I was elected as the leader in 2017 was to lead the party into the 2021 Scottish Parliament elections. And so I am determined to do that. When this question arose, I was inundated by calls from people, and frankly, not just people who had voted for me, but people right across the Labour Party, from the left, the right and the centre, who were all saying that they wanted me to continue as leader. And so when we had a debate about it at the Labour Party Scottish Executive, that view was endorsed.
Now, this weekend is the 20th anniversary of the death of Donald Dewar, our first minister. Back in 1999, Donald Dewar said, "This is about more than our politics and our laws. This is about who we are, how we carry ourselves." Richard Leonard, how are we carrying ourselves at Holyrood?
Well, I think we could do better. And it's time for the Parliament to reflect on those values that Donald Dewar set out as the First Minister back in 1999. And I think we need to return to those founding principles and reassert them. And I think that's a call I don't make in a party political sense. It's a call I make on every party in this Parliament, that we need to be more transparent, that the government needs to subject itself to full scrutiny. And I think we need much more openness. I think that I discern that over the course of 13 years of SNP office, they've become more secretive and less responsive to the levels of parliamentary accountability and scrutiny that I think we need for a healthy democracy.
Richard Leonard, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
The Scottish Parliament has voted against Westminster's internal market bill. By rights, that should mean the bill will fall. But Prime Minister Boris Johnson has already made it clear he will push ahead despite opposition from the devolved parliaments. The Scottish Conservatives were isolated at Holyrood. They're the only members to vote in favour. The internal market bill is opposed by governments in Belfast, Cardiff and Edinburgh. They say it's a major threat to the powers and capacities of the devolved nations and is a rollback to centralisation in London. Deputy Presiding Officer Christine Graham is in the chair as Scotland's Constitutional Secretary Mike Russell sums up the debate.
This bill is illegal. It contains breaches of international law. It would therefore be against the ministerial code for any minister in this chamber to support this bill. I have to say to you that I have a lot of time for some Conservative members. Not many, I have to say. And I'm going to again embarrass Liz Smith, because I have a lot of time for Liz Smith. She was my shadow when I was Education Secretary. She regularly called for my resignation, but I got over it, I have to say. And therefore, I want to reflect on something that she said about the change over the last few years. Now, she said it, unfortunately, I thought, in a somewhat dismissive way, as if I had changed my mind and vacillated on these matters. But actually, I just want to go back to 4 years ago, and it's useful that Ruth Davidson is sitting behind her, because she herself, on the day after the 23rd of June, a period after, was very clear that what Scotland should be seeking is the closest possible relationship with the EU, and indeed continued membership of the single market and the customs union. Those were the things that united most of these chambers after the 23rd of June. And isn't it extraordinary that just over 4 years on, what we've actually experienced this afternoon, Tory members mouthing off about EU, us handing powers to Brussels, attacking alignments on standards, bad-mouthing Europe, essentially painting Europe as the devil incarnate, because that's what we've heard and that's what we hear again and again.
And that's The Week in Holyrood. I'm Charles Fletcher. Thanks for your company.